Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Today on our podcast, we have Kim Ellsworth here, and we're glad to have you here, Kim. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And this is the second time you've joined us?
Yes, this is the second time.
Yeah. No, that's good. We're glad to have you back. It's always fun to bring back people and get new information. And Kim is the Director of Education for Heritage Academy Schools. There's 8 schools in the Phoenix area, roughly serving, I think we're just under 5,000 at Heritage. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
We call them scholars.
We do.
They're wonderful people. Kim, tell us a little bit about your background, though, and short journey in education or long journey in education.
Okay. I have been in education for quite a few years. I think I've always said I want to be a teacher. So if you ask my brother, I taught him when he was 5 years old.
Fun.
I guess he was 3. I was 5 and came home from kinder. And I think I shared that on the last podcast too. But one of those things I always knew I was going to be in education for. So for quite a few years, I've been in education. And then on the side, ran some of our own businesses. And then I've been with Heritage Academy. So probably 10 years.
What year
now
is this?
I don't remember. So I did a few before I had a family. I did
taught
a few
a
with
years,
Heritage.
Yeah.
And then I think this round I've been here about 10 years and run a couple of their schools in between. So it's been good to be
That's right.
The administrative side.
Kim Ellsworth started the Heritage Academy Levine campus, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year.
Yes, it is.
So congratulations.
And then you helped open the Maricopa campus.
Yes.
In the town of Maricopa.
Yes.
City of
Maricopa.
City.
Yeah, maybe we'll have that as a topic one time. How to start a
how
new
to
school.
Launch, how to launch a new school in a community that's never had any product like it.
It's true. It's true.
It is true. I literally got a call over the weekend about another request for another Heritage in another city in Arizona. I'm not going to say where it is because it may never come to pass. But anyways, maybe we'll talk about that.
Parents.
How to launch a school.
Launch
and
a school.
Now you're the education director for Heritage Academy.
Yes. Yep. So I get to do the whole education side, which is also exciting.
Which is great. And you have all that experience. Be the mentor to the principals who are
and
in
it's
your
funny because you think you have, I have a lot of the answers. I've done all of these things. But no, I mean, there's always something new. You're like, let's think
that's
about
great.
That. But yes.
Well, let's get into our discussion about civility and culture, which is our topic for today. And we've heard you talk about that a lot. You've given some great workshops on civility and culture and how that develops in a school.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the story behind the story. I mean, why has that been a pretty big emphasis on the schools that you've led?
I think it started because starting campuses, right? I've started a couple of our campuses and going in and realizing Heritage Academy has a certain culture that is very civil. It's very orderly. People notice that when they walk on campus. They notice the calmness. I've heard that quite a few times. So when I'm opening these campuses and it's a new culture, I have to teach that. So when you're teaching it, you have to really think through what am I doing to teach that culture? Like, how am I making this campus that it's going to be orderly at some point? And so I think it became near and dear to my heart because as I did things, for example, at our South Phoenix campus, when they wouldn't pick up garbage. That's one thing that we do. We pick up garbage after ourselves, and the kids would look at it and say, that's my garbage. I'm not touching that. It's not mine. And so just teaching them how to respect campus as well as respect each other, that respect I think sometimes is difficult to teach. But as we start there, that's where the story is because you can see where it wasn't there and then how they grow into that. So.
That's great.
At the end of the semester, they're okay picking up trash.
You know what? They are. And it's so great because we got them to the point where they're opening doors for people and picking up garbage, and they really do. And then they don't want a messy campus. They don't want that. They don't want the dirty campus. But in the beginning, they didn't want anything to do with that.
One thing that just blows away new teachers when they come to Heritage is they say, I had a student or scholar, as we call them, come up to me after class and say, hey, thanks for that lesson. That was wonderful.
like, when does that happen?
we've never had that happen. And so, I mean, that is a big part of the Heritage Academy culture that the American Classroom podcast is affiliated with. And it's very important.
Well, yeah, because you want to create a culture of learning. We're here to learn. We're here for the education. And so if you don't have all these little things that lead up to where someone can actually enjoy a lesson, like that's a big deal, right? In other schools, you hear, we couldn't even get to a lesson today because of this and this and this and this. They don't really. And so kids aren't feeling like they're learning sometimes because they don't have that culture of we're here for the education and not for the other nonsense.
Yeah, the whole idea of there's a time and a place to let your hair down and have fun, enjoy a social setting, and a time and a place to educate or worship or family time. You know, sometimes everything blurs together a little bit, but yeah, no, that's good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Kim, that was great insight. And so we're going to continue with a couple questions we want to ask you, and some of our listeners might be interested in hearing a little bit about how culture's developed, why it's important. But Lindsay, I know you've got a couple things you wanted to ask Kim.
Yeah, I mean, something that I've noticed in observing different schools and then Heritage Academy is there's a variety of levels of civility at different campuses based on their culture. So I was wondering, from your perspective, what are the benefits of having that presence of civility on campus? And then what are the consequences when that's missing from a school?
Well, definitely the benefit of kind of what we touched on a little bit is that we have that education setting, that we have a calm, orderly campus where we can actually get things done and we can get some teaching done. I mean, teachers go into the profession for teaching to teach, and they're hoping not to just manage things all the time. So when you don't have that civility, you usually don't have that orderliness and the respect that you need on campus. We're missing it. I mean, some of those consequences, if you don't have it, are definitely the you'll have fights, you'll have people who are just super disrespectful, and so you're constantly disciplining. And that, of course, is steps into helping your civility on campus and teaching that culture. You have to have those discipline moments, but you're going to definitely have a safer, more secure learning environment when it's there. So
that makes sense. Allows the teacher to focus on the instructional time and not the behavioral management time.
Yeah. And that's what we hope that, and I've seen that across our campuses quite a bit, is once we have that in place, really the teachers are spending their time actually teaching, which is what we want to have.
Yeah, funny how that works, right?
I know, weird. We hire them to teach. We'd like them to teach.
We talked about how you started new schools, and there was a teacher, it was a high school math teacher out of Yuma, Arizona, that called me like 5 or 6 years ago. And she says, hey, would you come build down here? We really need the heritage culture in Yuma, Arizona. And I said, why? We don't just like build on every corner. There has to be real good reasons why. And she pointed to culture. She said, I don't know what happened, but after COVID, when the students came back, it was bonkers. And the discipline level went kind of out the door. And the real issue wasn't that the children were bonkers, because children are children, right? And she was a high school teacher. But the real issue was that when the teachers were trying to discipline and follow the district handbook on discipline, they weren't getting backed up by their administrators. And their principal was saying, hey, just deal with it. Don't send them to me and the administration, the governing board. We're just pulling way back. They were just so afraid of lost enrollment, because there was a lost enrollment issue all across America, not just in Yuma. And they said, this is just, and the children knew it, and they were just running wild on the campus. And maybe that's a little extreme language on that, but it was a big shift enough for them to say, hey, I've loved this school, I've loved this district in the past, I've been very supportive, but enough is enough. And I still love teaching enough to see if we can get something else and something better here. So you've probably heard that story before.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I have a friend who's in a neighboring district, a principal, and he just said, you know, I can't do what you do with Heritage as a charter school, because our board will not back me up. So when I'm trying to discipline, when I'm trying to set those boundaries for these kids, I don't have that. I don't have that backup. So I just do the best I can.
Yeah. And that's super disappointing, because yes, we're a big advocate of charter schools, Heritage Academy, but we have to have a good, strong district system in Arizona as well for our state and the state culture to be strong. And from my time on the State Board of Education, shame on that district for not bringing the standards. They have good standards in their handbook.
Absolutely.
And those governing board members are there to serve those families. And those families are going to leave to find school districts that will just actually do what their handbooks say they do.
Weird.
I know. Strange thought, right?
Crazy.
And those governing board members can step up to it. They're abrogating their duty if they're saying, oh, well, we can't bring discipline because we're afraid everybody's going to leave. The truth is just the opposite actually happens. Because good families want good systems with good standards that are enforced. And so if there's any at school administrators or governing board members listening to this, step up if you're not already, and know that discipline is something that really creates the environment and culture, and it doesn't have to be punitive. It could be positive and supportive in a way, but it's a big deal, and so many districts are backing off this at their peril. So let us know if we can help you on that.
And most parents want that. They want their kids to be in an environment where they feel safe, where sure. the culture is inclusive, where everyone's kind to each other and respectful to the teachers. The teachers are happier, right, when they're respected. The students can interact with each other with respect and not worry about the bullying and the fights. And so I feel like, yeah, support on that side. Parents want it from this side. I know that it was an important factor in when I was making decisions on where my kids go to school, taking a tour of the school, seeing what the culture's like, hearing stories, kind of finding out what the, you know, classroom management sort of tools are. Yeah. And even for teachers who are looking at where to teach, where they want to teach, I know that we have a story of she's now a vice principal, assistant principal at one of our campus at the Heritage campuses, but she had taught at district schools for years and years, and it's like, I love this, I never want to leave. And she has a sister who teaches and said, come teach at Heritage. Her background is special education. She's taught in special education. And her kind of thing was that when pigs fly, I'm not going to work at a charter school like when pigs fly. And we actually have this interview on camera, so it'd be fun to put it on American Classroom at some point. But she said that she finally agreed to like come take a tour and see what this school was like. And she said this, the thing that stood out the most was the civility. Like, she used that term. She's like, a kid opened the door for me when I walked up to the building, and people said hi as I crossed the crosswalk, and everyone was like very respectful and kind. And so that made the biggest impression on her as a potential employee going to look at. And parents, as they come to take tours, also notice the same thing. And so it's a palpable thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As you go onto a campus.
Yeah. I know out in Maricopa, that was probably how I got half my staff when we first opened out in the city of Maricopa, the Heritage Academy, is that they came to an open house for their kids. And as they listened and learned about how we build a culture, basically, of our school, because that was a lot of the questions, because they were having concerns in some of the places they were at. And they're like, that's why we ended up applying for a position, is because I want to be at a school that is going to do these things. And then I found that also with that civility and this calmness you have on campus and these teachers able to teach, it also helps us keep our teachers. Like, they want to stay. So we probably have some of the best teacher retention because of the things that we are teaching our kids of how to be. So.
Yeah, and I think you're touching on something that's super powerful, and maybe I could just put some language that's used more in economic world sure. into education world. And it has to do, the language is virtuous and vicious cycles. Maybe you've heard that, right? A vicious cycle is when you're doing things that are really harmful, and you're going down, it's a downward spiral, right? You're circling the drain, right? And schools can get in a vicious cycle, right? If they're not backing up the teachers, if they're not enforcing their handbooks, most of these district handbooks are very good and they have good policies. They're somewhat different, but they're generally very good. And the families will come to these schools because they think that these schools will enforce these policies that they have, but they don't. And, or sometimes the teachers ignore it or something. And that's what builds a vicious cycle in culture. But when you train your teachers and your families and your administrators, I mean, everybody's in sync, you're building a virtuous cycle, right? And that's where you go up and up and up, because it's just the way it works that we do good things here, right? It's just the way we work. We have service projects and we hold doors open and, you know, we participate, right? When those are just the norms, you have a beautiful condition for a virtuous cycle in your school. And you've seen that, right?
Well, and going back to Lindsay's question from earlier, when she said, what are the consequences, right? When we have that, that's what parents want. That's, as she was saying, that's what you're looking for. So as I've not worried about, oh, I have got to keep that kid because we only have so many kids, but yeah. I'm going to make sure that we're following the standard, whatever that is, we're going to follow that standard. Then I do see the campuses grow, because then people will come thinking, I want to be on that campus. I want to be there, because we do provide a safe, secure place for these scholars to be. And parents will see that and then want to come. And then we have a problem of not enough space.
Yeah, you create another problem.
Well, we create other problems.
I feel like you have this for the homes that want that and are looking for it. They're probably teaching it at home, hopefully supporting it. They also want that feeling at school, that represented school. And then for the families that maybe not don't even recognize it, I've heard examples like in probably the one that you shared earlier was where you were providing a culture of civility on campus. The students are learning this, like the example of picking up trash. We have respect for our space. We have respect for our campus. We have respect for our community. And then that bleeds over into their home. And didn't you say that a parent was like, I'm really glad that you're teaching him to pick up trash because now he's cleaning up his room.
I was just going to say that's a that joke. Story, that's a real story because I've had parents say to me, oh my gosh, thank you, because now they're thinking about their room. Oh, I've always wanted to figure out how to get that clean. So
you're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks, we did that.
So just like how it translates into other areas of their life, it's not just in the classroom, but it really like they'll feel the difference at school and then hopefully they'll carry that on.
Yeah.
You know, and the most parents are really supportive of it. There's some parents that will always take the side of their child. And listen, I know it's their child and there's the affinity, but they choose to send their child to a certain school with certain policies and things like that. And for the most part, parents understand that relationship between parent, teacher, and child. And so they'll give the teacher the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, every now and then there'll be children that whose parents just believe everything they say, and they get the parents get manipulated by it because, oh, I'm going to play my parent off my teacher.
Yeah.
And that's a silly game to play, because do you think teachers really want to harm children? Of course, there's the anomaly, but for the most, not a chance.
We're not in it for the money.
They're not in it for the money, right? And they see themselves as a partner to the teacher, the parent. How do we support them? How are we auxiliary in building good young people?
I think that triangle really comes back to respect. We need to respect everybody in that triangle, right? We need to respect our scholars. We need to respect the parents. And our parents sometimes just need to tell us things, right? It can be hard. It can be hard conversations. But I think that mutual respect is what really starts to build that culture. If I respect you, like I'll say to the kids, I'll never yell at you. You're not going to have me yell at you. So please don't yell at me, right? Don't yell at me. I remember one of our South Phoenix examples was a parent coming in and the kid was there and the kid was always respectful to me and I was respectful to him and the parents just came in and, you know, they gave it to me. And later that day, the kid comes up to me. He's like, I just need to double check. Are you okay? Okay, Ms. Salsworth, I just want to make sure you're all right. Because we had this great relationship, but the parents didn't want to listen to whatever it was at the time. I can't remember. But I remember the kid wanting to have that, to continue to have that relationship with me, that we're going to be okay, right, after that incident.
That's good.
So, I mean, it happens. But I think it starts with that respect.
I like that. And I'm curious what you think about the respect being established. Well, first of all, you know, elementary school, they're little learners.
Yeah.
Junior high, they're kind of figuring out who they are, like their identity.
Yeah, I think so. That's a good way to say
it. My kids, I've seen that. And then high school, that continues. So I think it's important that they get that at school. But how do you see then, as junior high school, social media comes into their life? How do you see, trying to figure out who they are and their identity and get acceptance from people. And like, so how do you see the influence of social media on civility and culture in school?
So I think that schools are going to be tasked with that. Like they're going to be tasked more with teaching your behavior online, because that online, no matter what we do, it spills over into the schools. Because they'll say, oh, that was online. That wasn't at school. But when something is affecting school and it's now the drama is brought into lunchtime and at class and there's threats or whatever it is from this one thing that was posted, it becomes us having to teach these kids what is civility look like online? What is good citizenship online? What does that look like? And so I know part of our curriculum that we've introduced, at least on a couple of our campuses, is really that citizenship online, so that we can teach them when you're online, you need to be who you are, always who you are, because anyone can go back to that. Anyone can see that. And we've had a couple incidents with social media where they post something and think, well, I just posted it. It's no big deal. Well, you posted something that you had a gun and it says, don't come to school tomorrow. Like, that's not funny. And that now what you've done is you've maybe created so you can't come back to this school anymore. So you've got to be really careful to be able to teach that to the kids. But we're not doing a lot of that teaching in schools. And I think that's really something that's going to come back at us if we don't, because it'll just be another downfall at school, because it's just going to keep going. Because it's a constant.
Yeah. And I know teachers would rather not take away classroom time to deal with that. But because it's such a huge factor, there's just no avoiding it.
Yeah. It kind of comes with computer skills. Like, it's, your computer skills are happening. And then when you're online, you need to make sure you're doing these things, a part of citizenship.
Right. And same thing if you have a contract with your students that if they're going to use the computers of the school, then they have to abide by these rules, right?
Where absolutely.
You, what websites you can go to, what you can't go to. And then that could, even in a keyboarding class
or
something, you could introduce like, and then how do you interact online? There's probably ways to find it. Even if you don't have a daily citizenship class, there's probably a way that schools can integrate and take time, maybe a homeroom or however the schools do it. Talk about that. Because it does, if you're, you know, being sassy and talking bad about one of your classmates, well, then, like you said, it's going to be gossip. It's going to be lunchroom. It's going to affect that person if they feel safe and comfortable at school. So it really does.
I can't tell you how many social media posts and text message threads I have pictures of from over the years, because they will
it's
come.
It's almost central to.
You have to in the investigation, because you're like, well, what happened in class? And then they say, well, it happened because of this and because of that. And then all of a sudden, parents are sending you things and you just have text messages and social media posts. And then you're trying to figure out where it all came from. But it absolutely affects schools. And I think that's part of why a lot of schools now are trying to get phones out of the school, because then at least when phones are away during school, you don't have the during school hours that hopefully things like that aren't
interruptions,
going back and forth.
Distractions. Yeah.
There's a lot of states that are looking to ban cell phones.
Absolutely.
Here in Arizona, the state superintendent is really encouraging the legislature to do that. So we're recording this in August of 2024. And I don't know that any states have banned, maybe they have, but
I know certain public districts have done it.
Yeah, it's getting tailwind. And I think that's where it should, every district should get its own cell phone policy instead of some blunt force from the state or the federal government. But
something.
Yeah, teaching it, at least that helps prevent these situations where it is someone's, you know, parents are sending you screenshots of a message that so-and-so sent to so-and-so. And so just like, you know, you guys, let's just avoid this altogether.
Yeah. That's right. In business school, we had a law class, and he asked us, do you know what the E in email stands for? And we're like, yeah, you're probably going to tell us, right?
He says, evidence.
Evidence, that's right.
Who stopped me that?
Evidence. Young people need to know, that's right. It's the best evidence. Lawyers love email and social media, so.
Well, I had an incident on one of my campuses where some kids had met someone online and they had been communicating with them. And I didn't know any of this. All I knew is that at some point my teachers were getting prank calls, all of my teachers. So like the list of and so it was weird when it became all the staff members getting a prank phone call. I'm like, okay, somebody at school must be doing this if everyone's getting prank phone calls. And the teachers were reporting it because they felt it was a student, right? They'd hear voices or whatever on the other end of the phone. And when I started investigating it, they're like, oh, it's, I can't remember the name they used. It's Jim. I'm like, who's Jim? Ah, he doesn't go here. It's Jim. And so everyone kept telling me it's Jim. And these are like seventh and eighth graders. Well, come to find out Jim was, which they didn't know, had been giving them, well, they knew this. He delivered like pizzas to their house. So he knew their address. He knew all this stuff. And come to find out he was an adult male from like out in Chicago that was fishing these kids and then had been making these prank phone calls because they thought he was super cool that he's going to make these prank phone calls to the teachers. So it's
online
interesting.
Predator.
Then I'm having to give this communication to the parent, like, this, just be careful how we're online. So this was a huge thing that came into school that was really just an online thing. But then I had to spend a day or so trying to figure out where it was coming from and who was calling all my teachers. So just an example of how it spills over.
Yeah. And thank goodness that...
I know the parents are pretty grateful.
Well, we have a podcast parents. Episode coming up on online safety, and we have an incredible guest, Art Schmeiser out of Texas, and he's done a lot of work in Arizona and Texas tracking down these online predators and throwing them in jail.
Oh, good for him.
It's going to be a really good show, so stay tuned on that one.
Love to talk to him. That'd be fun.
Well, those are great examples. I want to talk a little bit about the role of electives. And when I reflect back on my high school experience, I went to a high school over in Mesa, Arizona. Mountain View High School is the name of it. It was, the subtitle was what were they? They were the Toros, but the School of Champions or something like that.
Okay.
And the culture there was really driven by electives. It was really interesting. They had this incredible football program largely, and this incredible coach, Jesse Parker. If anybody's listening to this, you know that name. He's in the Arizona Hall of Fame. And the expectation, and they were outstanding in many ways, but that drove the basketball team to be a state contender and champion for many years. But on the academic side, they were just as strong. It was nuts. I think for like 10, 15 years, they won the academic decathlon. They had all these national merit finalists. And the culture on this campus was just a runaway train of success and championships. Nothing except an undefeated record and a state championship in anything was this. It was just the standard. And it was interesting, that mindset that came out of that. And of course, we had our knuckleheads and we had fights and, you know, there were drugs and alcohol. There were all the normal things on there. But the culture that was driven by the electives just set the tone for decades. And even though that school is not performing as high and well, they're not winning the championships, that culture still persists there. And people actually still enroll there thinking that that school has all that excellence in there. And I hate to say it because it's my alma mater. It's been gone for about 10, 15 years. People don't want to admit it. But that's the power of culture, and especially coming out of the electives. I'd be interested in your comments on how you've seen electives build and support the culture in a particular school.
You know, it's interesting because our small schools, we have small schools, and in that small environment, we're able to offer so many things, but we're able to offer them and kids are able to take most of them. So I always like to say, I had an athletic director who said to me, how do you see athletics, you know, really running in at this campus? And I said, you know, I want our school to be like High School Musical. Like, I want the kids to be able to be involved in as much as they possibly can be involved in. I also believe if kids are busy, they can stay out of trouble. So yeah. The busier we have them. But I really think that those elective teachers and those things that they sign up for are those are the things they want. So if they have this desire and they have this passion to be in that class, those teachers actually have a better effect on how that kid is going to behave or is going to act, because they want that and they want to show that teacher, like, I'm really good, or that coach, right? They want to be the best for that person. And so I always tell my coaches and my elective teachers, you guys have a lot of power. You have more power than you think you do. They have to take English. Like,
right.
No one wants to be in that English class most of the time. So those are the teachers that can really have an effect on them. And I think that's why, coaches especially can have that effect, because those kids, they'll do anything because they just want to be better, not necessarily just for the coach, but to be better at that sport, to be better at that.
It's not just football or basketball. It's about character, right? It's about excellence or whatever they're emphasizing.
And that coach is watching them and like cheering on their success.
Yes.
And so I think that's also why they're looking to their coach to be like, did you see that? Did you know? That?
And look at, it's like, okay.
Measuring improvement and encouraging him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about sports, but the arts can establish the same culture for good or bad. They can set a virtuous or vicious cycle.
Yeah.
You know, we joke about band geeks, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point, is these marching bands in some of these high schools in the U.S. are unbelievable. And people will literally move across state lines to go to a particular marching band in the South because of its tradition and heritage and the cool stuff they do. We always go to the Macy's Day Parade, or, you know, we always go to this, or, you know, it's just super fun.
Well, it's interesting too, because those electives, when you're saying they encourage and they move the kid on to be more successful, when we're talking about feedback for scholars, right, we're in the classes and we're wanting the teachers to give feedback. It's a natural feedback situation when you're in an elective class, right? Because if you're in band, well, you play that note wrong, like play it again, right? And continue to get it right. We're not always having that same feedback in the actual classrooms. And so that's something I'll always lean on for my academic teachers, is to say, how can we give better feedback immediately, like we naturally do in these other courses? It's just what it is, right? And it's not easy to get there, but because we're giving that feedback, then it's building that in the kid already, right? We're already building that character and helping them be better in that moment. But how do we do that better in the academic classroom? So that was always the challenge.
Lindsay and I just had a really great episode. I think it'll come out as episode 18. I think it's just rolling out. And we had a great artist who, his name is Jason Barney. And he talked about how, at least in the arts, one thing that's different than athletics is you are more working as a team, right? The choir has to sing together and harmonize, and the band has to work together. And that whole sense of teamwork and working together is really an interesting feature in music education in terms of building culture, because it's not competitive, you know, at its core. There's benefits to learn from competition, no doubt, but in the arts, those athletic areas can actually add to the culture in ways like teamwork that you don't actually see in some of these others where you're trying to beat them in the 100-yard dash.
Yeah. I think it helps build that, again, going back to our word civility, it really helps build that because you have to give and take. You really do. You can't be the loudest one in the choir. You sound ridiculous. So you've got to figure out how to give and take and talk to each other and make that scene work or whatever.
You know, and if we think about what we're doing in education is we're building the future of the community and the country. I mean, the future of America sits in the American classroom all across the states. And how lucky are we to be there building the future, right? The future men and women, the future heroes, as we call them at Heritage. So we're lucky, and to the extent we can establish the culture of civility and the culture of teamwork and excellence, I mean, it's a special place to be. We're really lucky to be in that industry, in that classroom. Well, let me talk to you about language as well, okay?
Okay.
Because I think, I just remember growing up, my dad used to always call us men, and my sisters, women. And I didn't think all that much about it, but...
I always remember young people from
young
your dad.
People. Yeah, he would use that as well.
Young people.
Yeah, listeners know, we've had him on the podcast before. He's the founder of Heritage Academy that's affiliated with American Classroom. And I, you know, we were all a bunch of knuckleheads, and I'm sure the word men for us, for his sons, was aspirational.
Hey, but if you talk it up.
Right. But he wanted us to be there. Right. And Heritage Academy, we would call them scholars. And I use the word kid every now and then. I try not to, actually. I don't know if you knew this or not, but I grew up raising goats. Oh. I don't know if you knew that. I would milk goats, and I'd go to first grade or second grade growing up, and we knew goats. So a kid to me is a baby goat. We had baby goats, and they're not children. Children are different than baby goats. And we call them kid. And one time we had a principal that got feedback, and the scholars were saying, quit calling us kiddos. You make us sound like children. We're in high school.
Yeah.
So my point here is the language we use can also establish civility, culture, help them understand who they are, you know, in these formative years. And so I'm not super good at it, but, you know, we call them scholars, and I try to call them, you know, our young people or are the men and women of Heritage, right? And, or you can call them the athletes or the artists or actors or actresses, instead of language that
is demeaning or reducing sort of their status.
Yeah, something like that.
So using language as like for them to meet an expectation, to like rise to an expectation, or like, would you call your like virtuous
spiral? It's the Goethe concept about treating people as they can be, and then they'll grow into it.
Yeah. I also think there's language of just like the please and thank yous, right? Like that was a big thing that I had to teach scholars over the years. Like, okay, that's when you would say thank you. Yeah. But I would also say thank you to them all the time and please to them, because that's showing that respect for them too. So not only are you trying to use language to raise them, but you're trying to use language to say, this is how you act in a situation like that. Because a lot of times they don't understand. That's when you say please and thank you.
Yeah, I attended a conference last week, and one whole breakout session was on words matter. And that was the main point, was this, that words really do matter. So even the please and the thank you, they're really important.
Yeah. And it's just those small things, right? It's the small things that make a bigger impact. So,
well, grace in politics and in society is diminishing, sadly. And so the little language of grace and, it can be very, very powerful.
Yeah. And treat others as you'd want to be treated. I want to be treated kindly. It's nice.
I know. Whatever happened to the golden rule?
Let's do that. Because I like that. So I'll do that for you.
It's so simple, but I'll step back from the topic of language to the point of the example of our teachers. So if we have listeners out there that are shopping schools that are wondering, where is my child best suited to go? When you go on a tour of that school, and we always encourage people to take a tour.
Yeah.
See how the young people interact, but especially look at how the teachers behave. You know, maybe go there and watch lunchtime. And if the teachers are acting like, you know, the latest celebrity or trying to just be friends with the children, then you'll know that maybe that's what you want your children to grow up to be. But if they are truly pillars in that institution and they, you know, have those behaviors that you want your child to emulate, that's probably a good school, because we all know, we've all raised children, right? And we know that they start bringing back language and behaviors of their teachers. And it's kind of funny as they go through the different programs, you're like, oh, you're getting that from Mrs. Smith or that from Mr. Jones. And they kind of see that come through. And, you know, I don't call them out on it, but.
But you can see it. And I think it's important for us to remember as educators and as parents that the scholars are learning by our example. So one of the biggest ways to have an effect in the schools and to have that culture built in the schools is to be that good example, so that we know we're not just out there to be your buddy. We can love you to death because we love our scholars, but we're not going to be your best friend. We're going to help you learn.
Yep.
And be educated.
Yep. So that's a big deal.
How do you think that parents and communities can help support schools in building that kind of culture of civility?
Gosh, I can go on about that for a while, maybe parents to begin with, but just the fact that don't always blame the school. I think that that's what school sees a lot. Schools see a lot, I should say, is they see that they're being blamed for whatever's happening. So if something happened at school and we're trying to say, hey, this isn't how we handle this, you know, at Heritage, this is not Heritage standard, as just as an example, a lot of parents will fight back and be like, well, that's not how we do it. And there are cultures you have to be concerned about, right? I think that goes to one of our questions on the culture of the different diversity that we have on our campuses. We have to be careful of that. But at the same time, we need parents to support the school and have that triangle that actually works. So it's the parent, the teacher, or the school, and the scholar, so that those three work together. That's one of the biggest things. And I think some of it comes back to that social media, because schools will just get blasted over the littlest thing, right? It'll be like, oh, I don't know, you couldn't drop off outside food at school. And then everyone's just going on and on and on and on social media about how terrible and stupid this is. And sometimes I'll read these, not even just about our school, but about other schools. And I think they have no idea what it's like to run a school. Like, that's all I think about when I'm reading through it, because I can see the logic behind it as someone who's run a school. But if you haven't sat in that principal's seat, I would just say, try to think outside the box a little bit, because most likely they're saying that for a good, solid reason, not just because it's some stupid thing that they're coming up with. So
Kim, if a principal or a teacher or a governing board member is listening to this, what strengths do schools have in their systems or processes, or, you know, in if you think of all the things that make a school, what could they use to build a good culture or turn around a culture that is in a vicious cycle?
Well, I would start with that you can teach character on campus. Like, you've got to be able to have, how do you get that character piece in there? How do you teach them how to say their please and thank yous? How do you teach them how to open the door for other people, right? Where they see that on our campuses. Like, how do you do that? There are little things like that you can put into place. I think when you come to governing board members and community leaders, to be able to support the schools and the principals in the way you were talking about earlier, like, support them in the fact that here's our standard. Can we please stick to it? So mainly follow through, I guess, because a lot of what we see is schools are not able to follow through on something that's in their handbook already. So follow through with what you say you're going to be, and then that's going to help build that culture, because you have said it from the beginning, I'm going to be that. So just follow through on that. But then where you can add in those lessons on citizenship or character, how you act on a campus, this is how we treat each other. There's a great story from, the name isn't coming to me, he was a superintendent of Phoenix Union for a while. And he was in one of a class I had been at, and he had said how he went out to Camelback High School here in Phoenix and he had to turn it around. And they really did. They had to go through a lot of discipline and gangs and get through some of these kids just disciplined, but then they knew what the boundary was. And he's like, if you came on me my campus the next year, everyone was holding doors for each other and high-fiving each other and giving each other side hugs. Like, there was created a culture because of just putting the boundaries into place and sticking with the boundaries. So
I like that. Yeah. Anything you want to add?
I was just going to say, how else do you see, besides just the respect, how do you see schools maybe do better for the schools that hold boundaries and create a culture of civility versus schools that don't? Like, do you see performance differences?
Yeah, I was reading just a couple weeks ago, and they were mentioning how when you are teaching character at schools and teaching the citizenship, that you have the schools end up with higher academic achievement and outcomes. Thank you. And one of the things that I learned as well along the way is that if you really come into a school and you worry about the culture first, you're really worried about this culture, about the civility of a school. If you worry about that first, test scores will come. They'll come. So don't worry about test scores when you're first in a school, turning it around or starting it. We don't worry about that to begin with, because we want to build that culture, and that human being is who we're worried about, and the rest will come.
It reminds me of the old study at college where if your son or daughter goes into college, goes away to college, and is in a dorm with a bunch of slackers that just play video games or scroll all the time, then their grades, GPA drops significantly. But if they're dorming with people that take academics seriously and, you know, are there for the right reasons, then the GPA goes up significantly.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, the culture set wherever they go. Yeah. And there's definitely the exceptions to that. There's lots of people. But I like how you're emphasizing working from the inside out.
Absolutely.
Helping people make that decision of like, hey, it is hip to be square. You know, the old Huey Lewis song. Maybe we can have that our bumper music.
That's
here,
right.
Today. But thank you for this conversation on civility and culture. And, you know, sometimes people think it's the soft, the squishy stuff. And they, but you know what? This is the hard stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot harder than calculus.
Following through, just FYI, is really hard.
That's right.
So even when it sounds like it's easy, it's probably one of the hardest things school leaders can do, is actually follow through on what they say the standard is.
Right. And I don't think anybody listening to this should say, oh, that's just the little stuff, because the little stuff is the big stuff. Right. And you just start with the layers that you can control, continue to build. And hopefully the school leaders and governing board members that are listening will see their particular role in it, because everybody really has a role in it. And I hope as a culture, we see why this is important. Right. Because we see our young people as the future and what we're building, and because our young people are worth it. It is worth it for us to have a good team in a community as adults to raise that next generation.
Well, so, it's worth it because it's our future.
It is.
It's our future of our communities and our country, everything. So
their future and their children's future. And anyways, but thank you. Any last words, Lindsay or Kim, on this topic before we wrap up?
As the teachers are respectful to the kids and they understand that they really care about their success, and they form not a relationship, not a buddy-buddy, let's talk about TikTok, right? But like as a relationship of, I want you to succeed, I'm here to teach you and help you grow, then the child rises to that expectation. And so I can see in my own kids how that's happened. And my kids might start at the beginning of the school year like, oh, this teacher's so strict and so hard. And then by like Thanksgiving, Christmas, they're like, this is my favorite teacher. I love them. Can we get him a Christmas present? And I'm like, wait, what? The same teacher you have is so strict. But like they really feel like they care. There's this relationship and this expectation. And then they encourage them. And so I guess my point is that like that civility translates into student success. I have seen that personally. And so it's just neat to hear that there's a study showing that academic performance improves.
Yeah. And I also think, going back to what you're saying about how they know that they care. I mean, we always say that to our teachers, like they've got to know that you care, if that you can teach more, if they know that you care. And they do. The scholars want to rise to that teacher, just like they would a coach, to be like, hey, I'm here now because I can see that you really care about me. I've had some of the hardest teachers, who kids really have come to me trying to get them out of the classroom because they're so hard and they're so strict and they're doing all these things. And then a couple of years later, who are they coming back to visit when they've gone away to college? This teacher, right? That teacher is the one, because those kids, no kids, not kids, I'm those sorry. Scholars yeah, and students.
You can say the word kids.
They know that teacher cares because of the boundaries that they're putting in place. So even though they're strict and they seem strict and mean to begin with, they know that they care because they've kept you in those boundaries and they've taught you all of these things. So I think it's amazing.
That's great. Well, thank you. This is a great discussion. We could probably go on for a little bit more, and maybe there's a part two to this that we need to have sometime. But great insight. I hope people that listen to this enjoyed some and took something away for whatever they use, whether it's their use in choosing the right school or strengthening their existing school. Maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're a school leader. Hopefully you got something useful out of this. That's our goal with American Classroom. So if you did find something useful here, please feel free to share this with someone that might also benefit. Thank you for listening and sharing your most valuable time with us today.
And thank you, Kim.
All right, thank you.